Bicentennial 8.
Welcome to Bicentennial 8. This series, produced by the Humanities Series Midwestern Center, is funded by the National Endowment for the Humanities. In this eighth bicentennial program, the Amish of Iowa are the ethnic study of Dorothy Schweder, lecturer at Iowa State.
Today I would like to talk about the Old Order Amish in the Middle West, with particular emphasis upon the Old Order Amish in Iowa. Since the early 1840s, the Amish have resided in the Middle West. Throughout the past several decades, they have expanded rapidly as they have settled many new communities in Minnesota, Iowa, and Missouri. Today, in Iowa alone, there are 5 Old Order communities located near Kelowna, Olwine, Milton, Bloomfield, and the newest one located near McIntyre. The Amish story is primarily a story of a people who have chosen to live apart from the mainstream of American life. Their social, economic, and religious institutions have been largely untouched by the rapidly changing world that exists beyond the limits of their small communities. Theirs is a fascinating story of a changeless society located in the midst of a rapidly changing world. Even with their isolated ways of life, however, the Amish serve as constant reminders of the many privileges that we have as American citizens today, as well as the many virtues that we feel are exemplified within our society. The Amish worship as they please with their distinct Anabaptist principles. Since they believe in nonviolence, their young men do not serve in the military, but are allowed to work in alternate service areas. The Amish own land and farm in a manner that reflects their love and respect for the soil and other natural resources. Amish families work hard, teach their children to be self-reliant, and they take care of their own members. No Amishman is ever in want for physical goods or religious solace because his people believe that they are their brother's keeper. Theirs is a society set apart from the mainstream of American life, and yet it is a society that exemplifies to many of us the highest ideals of our general society. The Old Order Amish in Iowa are descendants of a religious group known as Anabaptists, who originated in Switzerland in the early 1500s. The Anabaptists rejected infant baptism because they believed that all persons should make their own religious commitment. Once the individual did decide to be baptized, then the church membership would be a voluntary association of true believers. Along with adult baptism, the Anabaptists also believed in separation from the world and nonviolence. This meant their members should reject worldly activities and fashionable dress and live without signs of pride. They should be, in other words, a plain people. Anabaptists would not serve in any public offices and refused to bear arms, believing that Christians should not fight with swords, but with their religious faith and commitment. Eventually, the Swiss Anabaptists, commonly known as Swiss Brethren, came to be called Mennonites, taking their name from one of their early leaders, Menno Simons. The Anabaptist movement gradually spread throughout Europe, and eventually all Anabaptists, with the exception of the Hutterite Brethren, came to be known as Mennonites. The first Amish congregation was formed during the 1690s, following a dispute over the church rule of shunning. At that time, in the 1600s, all Mennonite congregations agreed that members who had committed grievous sins should be banned or shunned by other church members. There the consensus ended, however, because some Mennonite congregations believed that the ban applied only to religious activities, such as communion, while others argued it should extend to all aspects of an individual's life. Jacob Amond was a Swiss Mennonite minister who believed that shunning should be upheld as rigidly as possible, even to the extent of wives and husbands refusing to live with their shunned spouses. Ammon traveled throughout Switzerland advocating his position, and within a short time, the controversy had split most Mennonite congregations into two groups, those that supported Ammon and those that favored a more lenient policy on shunning. The people that followed this man came to be known as Amish. Beginning in the early 1700s, many Amish families responded to an invitation by William Penn to settle in his colony of Pennsylvania. Because of the great availability of land on the American frontier, the Amish soon began to spread out from Pennsylvania. Within the next century, Amish communities had been established in Maryland, Delaware, and Ohio. By the mid-1800s, the Amish had settled in Indiana, Illinois, and Iowa. The first Amish settlement in Iowa was made in Lee County in the early 1840s. In 1846, Amish families began to locate in Johnson County. From the beginning, the Johnson County settlement experienced many disagreements over practices and policies among its members. Shortly after the community was started, two Amish ministers refused to worship with their congregation because one of the members used decorated dishes in his home. The ministers believed that the use of these dishes reflected pride, and since the Amish were a plain people, only plain white dishes should be used. During the mid-1800s, Davis County also had a sizable Amish settlement. Some Amish families that had previously settled in Lee County moved near Pulaski in the 1850s, along with families from Canada, Ohio, and Indiana. This congregation was originally known as the Amish Mennonites, but later dropped the word Amish and eventually joined the General Conference Mennonite Church. This church is still active today in the Pulaski area. During the decade of the 1890s, Amish families initiated three settlements in northwestern Iowa. In 1892, several Amish families purchased land around Manson because it was cheaper than land in eastern Iowa. Later, a group called Stuckey Amish settled in the area. Wright and Pocahontas counties were also selected for small Amish settlements. In all of these settlements, with the exception of Johnson County, the Amish either left the area because they believed their group would not grow and they did not want their children fraternizing closely with non-Amish, or they joined more liberal Mennonite congregations in the areas. A constant feature of Amish life in America has been the formation of splinter groups. Most disagreements have remained local in nature and have revolved around the use of colored dishes or, in another instance, whether the ministers of a particular congregation should speak on Sunday morning from a low round table or a tall lectern. Although disputes of this magnitude have been constant, there have been only two major divisions among the Amish population at large. Around 1850, one highly significant schism occurred, which split the Amish into two major groups. At that time, some members began to feel that their Amish brethren were growing too worldly. Gradually, over the next 20 years, this group came to be called Old Order. As they resisted further change in their lifestyle, they rejected separate meeting houses for religious services, instead worshiping in their homes. They stressed plain clothing, and they insisted on a rural way of life. The opposing group were commonly referred to as Amish Mennonites, and over the year, most of the Amish Mennonites dropped the word Amish and joined other Mennonite congregations. A second major split that occurred within Amish society came between 1923 and 1927. At that time, a group that called themselves the Beachy Amish broke away from the old order. Today in Iowa, there is one Beachy congregation at Kelowna and one at Leon. These people differ from the old order in that they own automobiles, they install telephones in their homes, and they use electricity. Frequently, the Beachy Amish are referred to as the Church Amish, since they use a separate building for their service, and the Old Order Amish are then called the House Amish. With this historical background on the Old Order Amish, I would like to focus now on their general way of life in Iowa and the Midwest. Regarded as a quaint people, or sometimes as a plain people, the lifestyle of the Old Order Amish is a highly distinctive one. The most prominent feature of Amish life is religion, as their religious beliefs permeate every aspect of their lives. Their religious beliefs determine that they will be agriculturalists, living away from the cities where they believe temptations are ever present. They will associate in a meaningful way only with other Amish people, as they believe that God desires them to be, quote, a peculiar people, unquote, and to be not conformed to this world. Their religious beliefs determine their means of travel, their occupations, their choice of mates, and even their friends. Religion is all pervasive in Amish society. The organization of each Amish community is uniform throughout the country. Every Amish community is divided into church districts that contain between 15 to 30 families. These families all live in close proximity to one another, so that on Sunday morning they can all come together for church service. This will be held in one of the members' homes. In many ways, each church district is like an extended family. Every person is well acquainted with every other person, and if hardship strikes one family, the other families are there to help. The members of each church district elect their own religious leaders. Each adult member has one vote. The highest church official is the bishop, who is the leader of his people in the full sense of the word. Assisting him are several ministers and one or two deacons. Each man has a specific responsibility to carry out. The bishop performs marriages, gives communion, baptizes new members, and preaches on Sunday morning. The minister assists the bishop by presenting sermons in the church on Sunday morning, as well as helping with other religious work. The deacon is responsible for the widows and the children in the community. Some of the religious leaders have reputations for being excellent speakers, and in one instance when an invitation was extended to attend their church service, I was told that the bishop was such a great speaker that he would make my hair stand up on end. Since the Amish have no statewide or national religious organization or high-ranking religious leaders, each church district is largely autonomous in all matters that affect their members, whether those matters are religious, political, or economic in nature. Of all the Amish religious leaders, however, the bishop's role is the most significant. To function effectively, he must be a man of commitment and compassion. Because of the integrated nature of Amish society, he must not only tend to the religious concerns of his people, but he must also be concerned with their mental and physical needs. When a young Amish couple begins to have serious family problems, they come to their bishop. He counsels them, and he counsels with their in-laws, hoping to open avenues for discussion between them and to erase some of the friction and misunderstanding that might exist between family members. If an Amishman becomes too worldly in his associations with non-Amish people, the bishop must seek out the man and talk with him about the danger involved in such behavior. In all these relationships, the bishop must have great patience. He must listen, counsel, persuade, or admonish. And ultimately, if the member refuses to heed his advice, he must firmly rebuke them. Only if the errant member absolutely refuses to comply with the church rules or to repent and come back into the church group, only then will the bishop raise the issue of shunning with the entire church membership. If the congregation agrees unanimously that the member must be cast out, then the bishop imposes the ban or starts the shunning process. Other members of the Amish faith are to sever their relationships with the shunned member. They are not to eat with him, talk with him, or to engage in any activities with him. In most cases, this traumatic experience brings the desired results, and the young man comes back to the bishop, agreeing to repent and be taken back into full fellowship in the church. Once this member has regained his former position, the shunning affair is totally forgotten, and it is not raised at any future date. The Amish hold church services every other Sunday, and every family member eagerly looks forward to that day. The young Amish boys and girls enjoy Sunday because they have less work to do, and it is also a time when they can be with their friends. For the adults, Sunday represents a change of routine as they come together to worship, and it provides an opportunity to visit with friends and relatives. In fact, Sunday is such a special day that people miss church only if they are sick or if they are out of town. When the family is ready to leave for church on Sunday morning, several buggies are hitched up to accommodate all of the members, and everyone sets out for the Amish farm where services are being held. The drive is leisurely, as the family has allowed ample time for their ride. If they find themselves behind another buggy, they stay behind, as it would be considered rude to pass up another buggy on the way to church. If church is being held at a neighbor's farm, the closest families will walk rather than hitch up the horses. As the family sets out, it is delightful to see the children. One Amish boy of 4 or 5 provided a particularly happy sight as he trudged down the road on Sunday morning, obviously enjoying himself and his surroundings. His outfit was complete, with his large black hat resting on his ears, his white shirt with sleeves just a little too long, his black trousers with pant legs just a bit too short, his vest flapping open and shut as he bounced along, and then to add the final touch to his Sunday outfit, no shoes, just chubby, tanned, bare feet. At 9:30, everyone assembles in the main rooms of the farmhouse. The men sit in one area and the women in another, with the bishops and the ministers in between. 3 songs are sung by the congregation without any musical accompaniment, while the ministers and the bishop have a meeting and decide who is going to preach the sermon. Frequently, the singing has a sad, mournful quality, and it may take as long as 20 minutes to sing a single hymn. Following the singing, one of the religious leaders presents a short sermon, a prayer, and a scripture reading. Next, the main sermon is presented, which frequently lasts about 1.5 hours. The preaching is done primarily out of the New Testament, as the Amish use the Old Testament only twice a year in their religious services. The man presenting the sermon has selected a text, but he has not prepared a sermon. Throughout this message, he will reiterate the text and use many biblical verses, but the Amish stress that they do not prepare their sermon ahead of time. During the service, if the small children become fussy, the hostess may pass a bowl of crackers or cookies to quiet them, followed by a glass of water also passed from child to child. The service is ended by a benediction, announcements, and the singing of a closing hymn. The service will usually end around noon, and then the hostess serves a large lunch. Amish women traditionally serve bread, butter, jams, jellies, pickles, pie, and coffee. Families remain throughout the afternoon to visit and to catch up on community affairs. Around 4 PM, the horses will be hitched up, and the Amish families will head for home. The Sunday morning services also provides an opportunity for church members to discuss topics that are important but are not totally of a religious nature. In this sense, the church district becomes the unit of local government for the plain people. Following the formal church service, discussion will be held regarding problems of the young people, community events such as frolics, the health of certain members, and any other topics that might naturally arise. On Sundays, when church services are held, the Amish young people reassemble in the evening at the same home for their evening service, the Sunday Night Sing. This get-together provides an opportunity for the young unmarried people, 16 and older, to engage in courtship activities and also to participate in social activities geared to their age level. The evening is spent primarily singing religious songs, but it is also expected that there will be a great deal of laughing, joking, storytelling, teasing, and all the general antics that go on when young people get together in a social setting. Of all the features of Amish life, however, that reflect the values of the plain people, perhaps the most revealing is their sense of responsibility toward one another. No Amishman is ever in want for monetary or physical assistance because of continual support from his fellow Amishmen. In all aspects of their lives, they practice what we might call mutual assistance. This practice is one of the most significant advantages that the Amish enjoy in maintaining their economic stability. At any given time within any Amish community, every family has the backing of all community members and the potential use of all community resources. Under certain circumstances, Amish families can also rely on assistance from Amish families living in other parts of the United States. The major way that they have in different communities of communicating with one another is through a weekly newspaper called The Budget. It is published at Sugar Creek, Ohio. Each Amish community has a correspondent or a scribe that sends in the weekly news from their community. Amish families all over the country read the budget, and they know who has been ill, who has had an accident, and which families have had babies. When an Amishman in Milton, Iowa, suffers a severe skull fracture as a result of a fall, Amish families all over the United States respond by sending money to this family to help pay the high medical bills. Perhaps some families send only a dollar, but usually the total amount will be sizable. Several years ago, an Amish mother in the Milton community gave birth to a stillborn infant, and the money sent in by other Amish families totaled over $300. Mutual aid is particularly evident in the area of agricultural practices. When it comes time for a young Amish farmer to marry and to establish his own farm, if his parents or his in-laws cannot help him, other Amish in the community will usually loan money to him. Often the money is loaned at a much lower interest rate than that charged by the local bank. Perhaps no interest rate will be charged at all. The Amish also assist one another with building construction. When an Amishman needs a new barn or a new house, or just more work or more help with some of his tasks, he will hold a frolic. He will set a date when his relatives and neighbors will come to his farm and spend the day helping him put up the building or doing the work. Amish wives will also come together and prepare the noon meal for the workers. Mutual assistance is also evident with the elderly in Amish communities. When an Amish couple retires from farming, they do not move into a retirement home in the nearest community, but rather they remain on the same farm where they raise their family. The retirement of the parents often coincides with the marriage of the youngest son or daughter. The older couple will then move into a small house that has been moved onto the farmstead. This is known as the grandpa house, and the younger couple then will move into the larger home. The young couple, anticipating a large family, will then have the room they need, and the retired Amish parents will have someone to look after them, but they will also have a great deal of independence in their old age. The Amish pride themselves on the fact that they do not accept Social Security or any other type of aid from the state or the federal government. They take care of their own in the fullest sense of the word. In today's world, with our rapidly changing technology and social change, the Amish are becoming more and more visible as a changeless society, or at least as a society where change takes place at a very slow rate. Because of their old-fashioned ways and their attempts to shut themselves off from outsiders, many people assume that the Amish cannot possibly survive. In other words, a society such as the Amish are attempting to maintain is simply an impossibility in the modern world of today. There is no evidence that the Amish are decreasing in numbers or that the number of their communities is decreasing. In fact, the trend is in the opposite direction. Since the early 1950s, there have been 14 new Old Order Amish communities established in the states of Iowa, Missouri, and Minnesota. Many Eastern Amish families, faced with soaring land prices, particularly in Pennsylvania, are looking to areas like Missouri, southern Iowa, and southern Minnesota, where land is available and reasonably priced. A number of Amish families have also moved out of the United States, resettling in Central and South America as well as Canada. As long as the Amish are able to continue their expansion at frequent intervals, they will continue to possess a flexibility that is crucial to their success. The major reason that Amish people start new communities is economic. In other words, they are looking for areas where land is reasonably priced and where land is available in sufficient amounts so that a sizable number of Amish families can relocate. But there are many other reasons that might enter into a decision to move to a new community. Maybe a certain Amishman believes that his bishop is just a little too strict because he will not allow his members to work for non-Amish people. Maybe a certain family is having in-law trouble, and they believe that they would be happier in another community, away from their relatives. One family that recently moved to Milton believed that their children were not getting a proper education in the old community from which they had just moved. In this way, the ability of Amish families to move to any number of different Amish communities provides them with a safety valve for their discontent. Many other utopian communities in American history, like the famous Amana colonies or the Society of True Inspiration, had only one major settlement. And if someone did not care to live in that setting, the only alternative was to leave the group entirely. The result of the different Amish communities is that each one has developed a reputation as to whether it is somewhat conservative or somewhat liberal. Other Amishmen know what a particular bishop will allow his membership to do. In some communities, a great many Amish people work in outside areas, outside of agriculture, but in other Amish settlements, the number is very small. With this variety of communities to choose from, and the freedom to move at any time to another community, the Amish have a certain degree of freedom within their lives, even though the general rules of conduct are firmly established. Last year, my husband and I completed a manuscript on Iowa's Old Order Amish, the result of 4 years of study of the Amish people. When we finished the manuscript, we took a copy to several of our Amish friends in Kelowna for their consideration. When the manuscript came back, we noticed that in many places where we had referred to them as a chosen people, they had crossed out the word chosen and written in the word peculiar. We naturally asked about the change, and they told us that they feel the word chosen makes them appear vain and full of pride. They prefer to call themselves peculiar, and they then quoted a biblical verse that stated, "Be ye a peculiar people," to support their view. In their opinion, they are a humble people, true to their Anabaptist principles, and living the way that they believe God desires them to live. Perhaps it is this self-view, more than any other aspects of their lives, that enables them to remain a changeless people in a changing society.
The Humanities Series Midwestern Center wishes to thank Dorothy Schreeder for her ethnic study of the Amish. The Bicentennial Series is produced at the University of Wisconsin Telecommunications Center.
Wow.